you remember, maybe a year ago.
I remember.
A lot of fun, a lot of excitement. And today's program is both of Elivas and then of a Soroka on the topic of Chelas. The Shachas today ran a little longer, so people might be coming in and out and trying to get their breakfast. They're still listening while they're doing that, I'm sure. So without further ado, thank you, Elivas, for being here. The Rav is in Chicago, so I guess I'm introducing you today.
Okay, thank you very much. I much appreciate the invitation to be able to learn together a little bit this morning. I do have to apologize in advance. I'm going to have to run out after about 20, 25 minutes or so because I'm at a bris right now. And once davening is over and they're up to the bris, I need to be down there. So I'm not even in my own shul right now. But I thought it was a good opportunity to discuss Tcheles. First of all, it's always wonderful to be here in Cincinnati, although Bez Hashem one day we'll be able to be there in person. It's nice to be able to be together with you, at least virtually, to discuss important inyanim of Torah. And the week of Parsha Shlach is an important time to, or is an appropriate time, to learn a little bit about inyanim relating to Tzitzis and to Tcheles in particular, because this is where, in the Torah, the mitzvah appears. The topic of Tcheles is a complicated one, and it really is many topics. There's so much, there's voluminous material on the topic, and particularly as far as Tcheles Bizman Hazeh is concerned. I would divide it into three separate topics, actually. The first topic would be, how do we know what the real Tcheles is? Meaning, is there a way to identify whether what we claim to have is actually the genuine article, is actually the real thing that one can fulfill this mitzvah d'oraisa that was lost to Klal Yisrael for so many years with? And then a second topic would be, once we know that we have something that might be the real Tcheles, should we use it? Is it something that if my father didn't use it, my grandfather didn't use it? There are many Gedolei Torah Bizmanenu that don't use it. So don't we always follow what the Einei Ha'eda do, and therefore shouldn't we just do whatever the majority of Gedolei Yisrael do? And third topic is, if we do choose to use it for whatever reason, what should we do about all the machlokas that are involved in terms of how do we paskin where the Shulchan Aruch didn't paskin? How many strings should be tcheles? How exactly should we tie the tcheles? One thing that everyone agrees is that the way we tie our white tzitzis bizman hazeh is not the proper way to tie tcheles. The question is, what is the proper way to tie tcheles? That's a major machlokas rishonim. So how do we paskin on something that's a machlokas rishonim? So now, as far as the second and the third questions, I wrote about it in my first sefer chapter on each of those questions. So I want to focus on the first question of how do we know what the real tcheles is? Meaning, what are the proofs that what we have, or what we claim to have, is the real tcheles? That the murex truncula snail that we've identified is in fact the chilazon that Chazal referred to as the source of tcheles. So a little bit of history is important over here. The tcheles was lost a long, long time ago. The Gemara Menachos Daf Mem Gimel, I understand that many of the chevri here is learning Perakat Tcheles and Maseches Menachos. So the Gemara Menachos Daf Mem Gimel mentions that Rav Achai had it, and he was from the last of the Amoraim, Rav Achai. He was from around the year 500. The Medrash Tanchuma in this week's Parsha, in Parsha Shalach, says that it was lost, and the Tanchuma was completed in around the year 750. So we know already by between 500 and 750, that's where Tcheles was lost. That's where somehow we didn't have it anymore. So the Rizina Rebbe, who laid all the groundwork for all of the study of Tcheles, and Rav Herzog, who then continued that important study, both suggested that it must have been the Arab conquest of Palestine in the year 639 CE that destroyed all the dye houses, and once they didn't have the dye houses, they lost the expertise in how to make Tcheles. Or it could have been the Christian massacres around the same time where they murdered so many Jewish artisans, and we lost the ability, we lost the know-how and how to make Tcheles. And this goes back a long, long time. And apparently, you get the impression from the Gemara Menachos Daf Membeis that Tcheles didn't really exist in Bavel. It seemed to have always been imported from Eretz Yisrael. Abaye asks Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda in Menachos Membeis Membeis exactly how did they make Tcheles, which implies that Abaye, who was in Bavel, was interviewing someone who had come from Eretz Yisrael and maybe had that level of expertise to understand or to know how Tcheles is produced. And then, of course, in the later part of the 19th century, early part of the 20th century, there was a lot of work done to try to see if Tcheles can be rediscovered. I don't want to go through the whole history now because time doesn't allow for it, but if you ever really want to study the topic seriously, you want to learn the topic of Tcheles, you need to read the Svarim of the Rezina Rebbe. Now, we believe, almost everybody believes pretty strongly, except the Rezina Chassidim nowadays, that the Rezina Rebbe's suggestion of what was the Chilazon and what is the Tcheles is incorrect, but certainly he was an Adam Gadol Ad Ma'od and did a lot of work that really got the study of Tcheles, put it on the map a little bit. He published three books. In the Sefer Tzfune Tmune Chol, it was before he found anything, and he just wanted to prove that it's possible to rediscover the Chilazon, and that if we do, we should use it. Meaning, because that itself is a chiddush. Mehechi tesi that I'm supposed to be even trying to find the Chilazon. Maybe it's something that has to be nistar, that has to be hidden from us until Yemos HaMashiach. Maybe I'm not supposed to be looking for the Chilazon. So he wanted to show that we have to look for it. It's a mitzvah d'oraisa if we find it. So when we find it, we should use it. And then he put out a kuntras called Psil Tcheles, where he proposed what his idea of what the Chilazon was. A cuttlefish squid that was found near Italy. He did a lot of study of marine biology, and he thought that he discovered the Chilazon. And he sent this out to everybody, to all the Gedolei Torah at the time, and he got a lot of feedback, mostly pushback, mostly people who said that they're not so convinced that he's correct, and he therefore wrote a third kuntras called Ein HaTcheles. And in the Ein HaTcheles, he defends himself from all of his critics, and he tries to show that he's really correct. He tries to answer all of his kashas. Once Rav Herzog came along and started doing his doctoral thesis on Tcheles, Rav Herzog really set out to try to prove the Rezina Rebbe correct, and sadly, through his studies, he discovered that, without a doubt, the Rezina Rebbe was incorrect in terms of his identification of what the Chilazon was. And there are many reasons why that's the case. We're not going to get into that right now. But Rav Herzog even suggested at that time that maybe the Murex Trunculus, what we now have, what we use as Tcheles, when I say we, I mean those who wear Tcheles, who are not Rezina Chassidim, that you see, what they use as Tcheles, Rav Herzog thought of it, but Rav Herzog had some problems with it. His problems were that he thought that the dye was not something that really stuck to the wool, and it would fade. That happens to not be true. It's the strongest dye known to man, the dye that we produce from the murex. His other problem was that it wasn't blue, and that was a big problem, that it didn't produce a purple dye, but it didn't produce a blue dye. Now, that's a major issue. What Rav Herzog didn't realize at the time, and was only discovered later, was that if it's exposed to sunlight at a particular stage of the processing of the dye, it actually does turn blue. You don't have to add anything to it to turn it blue, just expose it to sunlight at a certain time, and that was only discovered later on when there was someone who was messing around with the dyes in his house. And if you've ever visited the Tcheles factory in Israel, you'll know that it smells, it stinks something awful. These dead snails, and the dyes, the secretions of these snails are awful smelling. So there was this fellow that was messing around with these dyes in his house, and his wife said, "Get that stinky stuff out of here. Yeah, get out of the house." So he left. He went out to the backyard, and all of a sudden it made it blue because he was outside in the backyard. So that was an unbelievable discovery, that they realized that what Rav Herzog had suggested is the most likely candidate for the Chilazon, and rejected because it doesn't turn blue, actually does turn blue. It does turn blue as long as you know what you're doing. And Rav Herzog also said that it's that his problem with the Murex was that it's not really Dome Liyam, which the Gemara suggests, that the Gemara says that it should be, the Chilazon should be. That doesn't seem to be correct, because Rav Herzog saw it outside of its indigenous environment, meaning when you take it out of the water, it's not Dome Liyam. But in the water, it really is much more Dome Liyam. So he suggested something else that was also had a problem with it because it was not steadfast. And then once we realized that the Murex does turn blue, it seemed, and the more archaeological finds that they had of major dyeing centers that were full of Murex shells and actual pieces of cloth that were dyed blue from thousands of years ago with Murex dye, so we realized that clearly, they were using this Murex truncula snail, this dye, in the dyeing industries. They were using it in great quantities. It was not a hidden thing. It was something that was well known, and it was used on cloth, and it's still, we find cloth 2,000 years later that's still blue, so it stays for a very, very long time. So it seems, based on the archaeological evidence, that if you were to ask an archaeologist whether this is the legitimate snail or not, there's no suffix. There's no suffix in the world of Mada, in the world of science, whether this is the real snail. The question is, does that matter at all lahalacha? Does it matter a little bit lahalacha? Does it matter not at all lahalacha? Or is it everything lahalacha? Meaning, do you say, well, metzius is what determines the halacha over here. If the metzius is that it's lechilazon, good, so then we have it. Or do you say, no, I don't care what the scientists say. Scientists say one thing today, and they'll say something. You know, if you went to a doctor in like 1940 and you asked him for the most ideal diet, he would tell you, smoke a pack of cigarettes every day and eat a lot of red meat, and science changes, people discover a new thing, so just like it changed from one year to the next, it's going to change again, and therefore we should ignore archaeology. Or a third approach, Rav Asher Weiss writes in his Tshuvas that other sciences are legitimate, but archaeology is hasharos bealma. It's just a bunch of guesswork, you know, because this is found here and that's found there, so I put together the whole rest of the story in my head, but it's not really legitimate. So that is something that Poskim struggle with, to what extent we rely on archaeology. But it's not just archaeology. There are many rayas that it seems that this fits, at least. And the Radziner Rebbe writes in the Sefer, if you find something that fits, then it's it. Because if it's something that, and especially if it was something that was used, because Chazal were very careful to warn us not to fall for a counterfeit, not to use kala'ilan. Kala'ilan is a plant indigo dye. That's agreed upon by just about everybody, what kala'ilan is, the identity of kala'ilan. Now, kala'ilan is chemically identical to the tcheles that we get from the chilazon. It's exactly the same color, and it produces it's kimat. The only difference is that kala'ilan is much more accessible and it's much cheaper. So if it were true that there was another blue dye that was also the same as kala'ilan, that wasn't the tcheles, it is a little bit odd that the Gemara is only nervous about kala'ilan and not nervous about this other blue dye, which was ubiquitous, which was it was found. It was something that they were using. We know. We found archaeological digs where there are thousands and thousands of shells. We know that it was used for blue. We know all of this as a metzius. It's a little bit shocking that the Gemara wouldn't warn us not to use this forgery if it in fact is not the real thing, if it's not the genuine article. And it also fits a lot of what the Gemara describes of the chilazon. The Gemara in Shabbos Tav Chav Zayin Amud Aleph describes that chilazon is found from Haifa to Sidon, which is northern Israel, southern Lebanon. It's exactly where we find the Murex snail. The Gemara in Shabbos Tav Ayin Hey Amud Aleph said that you would want the chilazon to stay alive while you're extracting the dye so that it will remain clear. And that implies that the dye starts off clear, and the murex goes from clear to yellow to green to blue to purple. If you expose it to sunlight, it stays blue. So it actually does start off as a clear dye, which seems like to fit beautifully with what the Gemara describes in Maseches Shabbos. Also, if the snail is dead, then a certain enzyme that makes the color change would deteriorate, and that's why we try to keep the snail alive as long as possible when extracting that dye. And like we said, it's chemically identical to kala'ilan, which is plant indigo, and it seems also obvious. I remember when I was a kid in elementary school, we were told that chilazon is a fish. That seems to not be the case, meaning that's a machlokas rishonim. Certainly there are rishonim that refer to it as a dag, but the majority of rishonim and the majority of makoros seem to indicate that chilazon is not a dag. This is also one of those areas of not only are there Torah sources on this, but as far as Mada sources, as far as what we know from linguistics, in all such ancient Mideastern languages, the word chilazon means snail. In Farsi and Assyrian, the word for snail is chilazon. The people who discovered the Tcheles said that they were on the beach looking for chilazons. They were going into scuba diving or whatever, and they heard a bunch of Arab kids screaming. When they saw them come up with the snails, they heard a bunch of Arab kids screaming, chilazon, 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 and they didn't know what they were talking about, and they were saying chilazon, meaning in their language, that's what they called a snail, a chilazon. But there are Torah sources as well. The Psikta Rav Kahana writes that there's a nartik that grows with it. A nartik is a shell. A snail lives inside of a shell. I happen to have a saltwater fish tank at home where I have a few chilazons. I have a few mirks, hopefully more soon. They just laid eggs, so we have a whole cluster of eggs, so maybe we'll have a few hundred more. But there's actually a guy from Cleveland that came to my house to take a chilazon out of my fish tank. I had four, so I offered him one, and he sent me an email that he's so excited that he has the first chilazon in the state of Ohio. So if anyone from Cincinnati wants to get a chilazon, you are not the first. You will be the second chilazon in the state of Ohio if you have one. So, it describes that it grows in a shell. A snail grows in a shell. A fish doesn't have a shell around it. The Gemara in Shabbos Daf Pei Hey uses the word potseya to describe how you extract the dye. What does potseya mean? Potseya means like to crush or to crack something. Sounds like it's a hard shell, not something that's like slimy and like a fish that's smooth and slimy, but something that's like an actual shell that's around it. The Ravya in Brachos quotes Yerushalmi that chilazon in Greek is proferin. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, which translates to murex. There's a brisa. The brisa says that it's briaso domeladag. This is one of those interesting rayas that people use in both directions. It's briyaso domeladag. So is that a raya that it's a fish, or is that a raya that it's not a fish? So half the people will tell you, it's a raya that it's a fish. That's why it says it's like a dog. It's like a fish. Whereas others would say, you wouldn't say a fish is like a fish. You would say that a fish is a fish. If you're saying briyaso domeladag, that its shape, its look is similar to a fish, it probably means that it's a snail that's not just like a round snail. It's a funny shaped snail that's narrow at one end and then widens and then narrows at the other end, much like a fish, which if you look at a Murex truncula snail, it is most certainly briyaso domeladag in that sense, in that the basic shape is the shape of a fish. The Gemara Megillah Davav says that the chilazon is tzmune tzmune chol, that it burrows in the sand. I can report that the chilazons I have in my fish tank, for weeks at a time, I won't see them. I'll always get nervous. Maybe they died. Maybe that, but they just burrow in the sand at the bottom of the fish tank, and they only reappear. I just every once in a while, if I want to make sure they're alive, I'll throw in some food and see that they'll come out. They'll come out to get the food. They don't need to eat very much, but if I get nervous, I'll throw in some food to make sure that they're actually alive. So one second. So if it's so obvious that Murex is the snail, why would is the chilazon? Why would anyone disagree? Why would anyone think otherwise? So there are gedolei Torah that think otherwise. There are gedolei Torah that believe that it is the chilazon and still think for one reason or another not to use it. But there are gedolei Torah that do not believe that it is the chilazon. The counter arguments were probably best formulated in a series of shiurim that were given by Rabbi Yisrael Reisman Shlita. There are a number of tshuvas that people wrote that are like, not real thorough studies of the topic, and it's hard to not hard to take seriously, but hard to really be convinced by a short essay that's not really a thorough study of the topic, by people who didn't dedicate the time to really go through the topic well. Rabbi Reisman Shlita certainly went through the topic. He certainly dedicated a lot of time to studying it. In fact, when I brought my Talmidim to hear a shiur from Rabbi Reisman in the summer, a couple of summers ago, we went to Camp Aguda, and all they wanted to do was ask him about Tcheles, because they thought it would be, because I happen to wear Tcheles, my Rebbe wears Tcheles, and they wanted to to Hakim about Tcheles. So when he opened the floor for questions, they all started looking at each other. I said, no, you can't. I said it loudly. You can't Hakim about Tcheles. You know, you have a Chashv Tam Chacham. Ask him about something else. So he smiled and he said, look, I hope you're right. I just don't think you are. He said, I hope you're right, because then my son and my son-in-law would be fulfilling a mitzvah d'oraisa every day when they put on Tcheles. Apparently his son and his son-in-law put on Tcheles every day. But Mistamadar Talmidim of Rabbi Belsky, because Rabbi Belsky wore tchelis. So anyway, I don't know whose family, so I don't. I'm just guessing. What are the counterproofs? So some suggest just because you found something that fits the criteria, it doesn't mean it's it. Maybe there is another undiscovered snail that has the same characteristics. So Rav Herzog already addressed that. He says it can't be, because then the Mishnah would have warned us not to use this well-known dye in place of Tcheles. Others say, well, you know, the Gemara says it's Ola once every Shivim Shana, once every 70 years. So that's also not particularly convincing, because, first of all, the Rambam doesn't mention that as a requirement, and we know that 70 is one of those numbers that Chazal use as a guzma. Dibru Chacham B'Lashon Guzma. Chazal often speak in exaggerated terms, and they use certain numbers that they always go to as an exaggerated term. So 70 is based on the Pasuk in Tehillim. Mishnos of Shaladim is the amount of time that it's called like a lifetime. So we're saying it's a way of saying that it's extremely rare. It's like a once in a lifetime find if you happen to have a tchela, if you happen to have chilazon that washes ashore. Obviously, you can't have an industry that runs based on a once in 70 year appearance of something. Obviously, it's not once every 70 years. They had all dying industry. Industry with tcheles, they knew how to go to the ocean and find it. Another taina is that the Rambam in the second parak of Hilchos Tzitzis says that the secretion is black, which is not true of the murex. Problem is, no one knows where the Rambam got that from. It's not in the Gemara. There's no Chazal that we know of that says this. And Rashi and Tosos and Menachos Membei say that it's blue. So to say that it's black is very difficult to understand. Meaning, at some point, you're going to say there are a number of things that are machlokas rishonim, and whatever you identify as the chilazon is not going to fit every shita in rishonim. Whatever it is, it's not going to fit every shita in rishonim, and you have to just assume that the rov rishonim were correct and that we're able to identify based on the way rov rishonim understood, especially when rov rishonim are based on chazal, based on the gemara menachos, which compares it dom aliyam, which is dom alirkiya. It sounds like we're describing something blue, not describing something that's in fact black. The one of the tainas is that that anything that's used l'melecha shamayim needs to be from a kosher species, and chilazon is most certainly not a snail. Is not kosher. So Rashi in Sanhedrin Daf Tzadi Aleph actually says that it's a non-kosher worm. So you have to say that at least according to Rashi and according to those Rishonim that it's a snail. You have to assume that that although the products of the Mishkan maybe have to be something that's kosher, maybe the coloring and the dyes do not have to come from that which is kosher. Others suggest, the Rabbi Reisman made a big deal about the fact that the Gemara talks about the Gemara in Shabbos, the Ayin Dalid, talks about the Malacha of Tseda, of trapping, when it comes to trapping a chilazon. And the Rishonim in Shabbos Ayin Dalid describe nets that they would use to trap the chilazon. And we don't trap the murex snail with nets. So you could just go to the bottom of the ocean, pick one up. They're snails. They don't move very fast. You could just pick, in my fish tank, if I want one, I could just put my hand in and pick it up. I don't have to do any act of trapping. I don't need to put out any nets. But the truth is, of course you have to put out nets, meaning because it's not easy to get to the bottom of the ocean and to stay there and to start searching around and finding tcheles, finding chilazons. The best way to do it is go where chilazons are, spread out a net, leave it there for a while, and then pull it up sometime later after they start gathering on top of the net. So now they use boxes instead of nets, but it's the same basic idea. And it's probably, even though the malacha of tzad, if let's say you're trying to catch a dog or a cat, so the halacha is that anything that you can catch in a single lunge is not going to be tzad midaoraisa. That's not going to be considered that you're trapping on a daoraisa level, because it's already nitzod va'omed. It's already trapped if you could just pick it up. So the taina is a chilazon, a snail. You could just pick right up. But the pashtus is that that's not true, because when it comes to chilazon, You can't just pick it up because you don't live at the bottom of the ocean. You need to be osa tachbulos. You need to come up with some plan. You need to figure out how you're going to get it. And therefore, you do trapping-like activities, such as setting out nets and doing things like that. So even though we describe one lunge, that's for land creatures, or that's for things that you have direct access to. But things that live at the bottom of the ocean, it doesn't matter whether it's one lunge or not. The point is, they have to do trapping. Rav Shlomo Zalman already points this out, that you have to say this way, because the Gemara talks about the Malach of Tzad and the Shemona Shratzim, including a Tzav, which is also something that you could just pick up if you have access to it. So you have to say that there's some sort of tachbulos that need to be done in order to be able to catch these things. So Pashtus is that that is not the strongest kasha. I'll end with one more raya, but then I have to run to this bris. The Gemara in Sanhedrin of Tzad Yalef describes the chilazon coming up in a mountain. Rabbi Reisman thought this was the strongest raya against, I think he thought this was the strongest raya against the murex snail, because it's a creature that lives in water. And it can't really live outside of the water for very long. So how could it be that it migrates all the way up a mountain and then goes back into the water? So the murex can't live out of the water for more than a few hours. So I actually, there's a fellow who got me my chilazons that I have in my fish tank who lives in Muncie. I said, where did you get chilazons here in Muncie? And he said that he got them, he had them shipped to him from overseas, I think from Morocco maybe. And he said that the person who was shipping them to him said, I'm not going to ship them to you because they're going to die. Meaning I can't put them in a box and just ship them to you. And the guy said, the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that you're wrong, that they're not going to die. So ship them to me. I don't believe that if they die, then the Gemara in Sanhedrin, I can't be the Gemara in Sanhedrin is incorrect. And they shipped them to him and they lived. So apparently they can live out of water for quite some time. They did. They got shipped, FedEx from Morocco. It took a couple of days and they were shipped. So they've been alive and well in my tank, in my fish tank for a couple of years already. So it's just a Metzius issue. That's not true. Bottom line is that we do have a mitzvah d'oraisa in this week's parsha to wear tzitzis with tcheles. And can you imagine if, like, we lost the opportunity? I don't know, if we lost what an esrog was for thousands of years, and then someone found an esrog, and we were able to fulfill that mitzvah d'oraisa. So our great love for mitzvos demands that we should at least think about it, at least consider whether this is something that we should be doing in order to fulfill what is undoubtedly what is a mitzvah d'oraisa. Okay, thank you very much. I apologize for the rush. Everyone have a wonderful, wonderful day.
Take care. Look at the crowd over here.
Thank you very much.
Nice crowd.
Thank you. Thank you.